Accession number 13361, Mr. K. Lodge, Reel 11.
And then they said, I saw him.
Mr. K. Lodge, Reel 11. You were moving from one camp to your Marienburg camp?
Yeah.
And the conditions you were travelling under, what were they?
Well, we were travelling in cattle trucks. And I can't remember how many men were actually in the truck, but we were well and truly packed in, and as I was saying, the toilet facility was only a leaking bucket on the floor. And the weather was cold, so but we kept warm because we're pretty cuddled in tightly, and maybe just sing songs, but that didn't last long. When the guard would be on the side of the wagon, tell you to shut up, or like that. And anyway, I remember one night pulling into the train actually stopped in a goods yard or transit yard. It was through the night, and we were banging on the doors shouting for water, and opened the doors and we were shouting water, Wasser, 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 and this German guard, oh Wasser, you, that was me. House, and he gave us a bucket. Come and see me. Where? And it was black dark and the blackouts. You know, very dim lights. And this guard said to me, "Come, schnell." And I was trying to get across all these railway crossings, and there was express trains flying through. I said, "What's that? I'm going to get killed here." Anyway, we got across all these crossings, and he took us to this top, and I filled the bucket up, and I fetched it back over the same procedure again, over these crossings, and there was engine shunting about it. And I got back, and everybody had a drink of water. There was more than me had to go up a water, you know, all the trucks as well. And then they said, I saw him back up there in the trucks, and they shoved me into this truck, but it wasn't my truck. I said, no, me. Here, get on. And they banged me under this truck. I was sitting with all strangers then. And then the train didn't move like it just moved. And then suddenly the doors opened again for some reason, I don't know. And then I was seeing this German guard. I was going, "Damn it, mate, been there." And one of them tumbled when I was trying to tell him, "Oh, yeah, he's been there. You know, he should be." And he put us back in that one, eh? But I was pleased. I got back to my mates. And then we eventually ended up in Stalag 4B.
How long was the journey?
Oh, I've seen him 2 or 3 days.
Did they let you out for exercise?
No, just part of the exercise. I got to come over that lane. We could stand up in the truck, of course, but we weren't, you know. We never got out the truck.
Over the 2 or 3 days, and did they feed you on the journey?
Yes, once a day. And I'd say it was mostly that Limburger cheese, which stunk. And it made you dead thirsty. That was why we were always shouting for water. Anyway, we got to Stalag 4B. That was an organised camp, Stalag 4B. And we went through the same procedure there, where you got deloused and through the showers, and Those seemed to put your clothes outside where you had to walk across the yard and get them or something, you know, stark naked. And it was cold weather. And got your clothes back on and we got inoculation of a German MO, but it wasn't in the arm, it was in your chest, in the muscle. Yeah. That was there. And then
you never know what that was for.
I don't know what it was for. Possibly, I don't know, maybe tetanus. I never knew what it was for.
Did it give you any trouble?
No, it was never any trouble. Later on, I had another one in my shoulder. Give you one in the shoulder. Where they just, what they do is they just stick a needle in, and they screw the syringe on. You think they were grazing a car or something. And anyway, we're in this Stella 4B. We had been deloused. Then they put rid of a hut, which was absolutely lousy with lice. It was infested. We used to get into bed on the night time, and they used to, the heat of your body used to attract them, and they would come out and they'd crawl all over you. And there was one chap got a huge nest, like a ball in his mattress. And we complained about it, and eventually they moved it out farther up into the camp, and it wasn't too bad. They put the Frenchman in. No one sleep in the fence. They slept on the table. And then it was the same there. You got one meal a day. And
was the food any better?
Piece of bread. The food was was better, yeah. By then, we'd get in a Red Cross parcel.
What time of the day did you get your meal, as a rule?
It was usually night time.
So you got nothing from night time to night time?
No. Just up to you, whether you eat your bread or you kept it till the morning for your breakfast. It was entirely up to you. And if you were lucky enough to have a Red Cross parcel, which you were very fortunate to get at that time, was, you know, you were supposed to have one per person, but it was always one between two, or sometimes one between four.
What were you getting in the parcels?
Well, that was very good. It was mostly tin stuff, and biscuits and powdered milk, and that type of thing. I always remember the American parcels had some very appetizing biscuits in. Big round biscuits. And I was sharing my parcel with a lad out the Welsh Guards. He came from Colchester. And we used to eat them biscuits straight off. No bother.
So you got American Red Cross parcels as well as...
We got American, British, Canadian, New Zealand, Australian babies.
How often did they arrive?
Well... Not very often, because at that time Germany was receiving a bashing, like, with the supply lines was getting heavily bombed by that time. You were supposed to get a parcel each. I don't know what the exact allocation was, whether it was one a week or one a month and a half, you know. But we, at that particular time, we never got that.
Did you have much problems from stealing? Other people coming and stealing your things?
No, we never had anybody stealing. If you were caught stealing, you were dealt with. In no uncertain terms. If you were caught stealing somebody else's Russians.
Your fellow soldiers dealt with you?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen a chap got beat up, and then he was handed over to the Germans. And he did. The Germans gave him a few years in solitary. I was serious staying anybody's in Russians.
The hut, was it heated?
Yeah, there was like a stove. There was a stove in it. So if you had like a tin of corned beef, you could cook it. Anything.
How many men would there be to a hut?
That's impossible to tell, really. Because the bed, the bunks are always in threes, the Germans. Always had them in threes. And there was quite a lot of men in a...
It was quite crowded.
Oh, yes, aye.
What did you do for fuel?
Spare beds.
What fuel did you use for the heating?
Well, the Germans did all this, they blocks all this synthetic stuff what the Germans used to make. They were like just blocks of fuel. They were quite good.
You'd be there through the winter.
Oh yes, I was there.
Did you get any?
I wasn't at Stalag 4B in the hard wind. I'd move farther on.
Did you get any change of clothing?
Never.
Improvement?
Never. We did get some clothing through the Red Cross, if you were lucky enough. But I come back in the same uniform when I was captured in.
You said that the camp was organised. How was it organised?
Yeah. Well, they had like entertainment committees and things. They had a exchange market, the canteen, the headquarter canteen. When somebody said, go to the canteen, I said, oh, I guess so, they did. That was just like an exchange. Mostly people that had if they'd been outside working, maybe they had any cigarettes off the Red Cross, they would exchange it for bread. And anybody had any bargaining to do, that was it. Kind of, but yeah, you had to watch the Russians. There was a set of things then. Make one, they would have a packet of cigarettes. But actually, when you got them, there was nothing in them and all this type of thing. Proper rogues they were. Because the Russian prisoners there weren't recognised by the Red Cross. And the Germans, they did treat them badly. Russians, they would set them as just muck, you know, because there was no international Red Cross for them.
Did you see them badly treated? Did you see the way they treated them?
No, I didn't. I mean, I'm not talking about actually physically treated, but they always seemed to get all the dirty jobs somehow, and they always seemed to be working around the company.
You've mentioned one or two of the organisations. How was the camp administered by the troops themselves? Was there a kind of a hierarchy of commands and orders?
Well, there was. You had like what you call your competence man here, maybe it's like NCO, possibly sergeant major. There was no officers in the camp. You know, all officers were never with men, and you just organised. You had your what you call a competence man. He was your spokesman. He did if you had any thing to say, you wanted to ask the Germans or anything, you did it through him. You know.
Did you get any opportunity to talk and possibly make friendships with Germans?
It was possible to make friends with Germans, but I didn't make friends with Germans. I heard people saying that Private Garda maybe get somewhere where he shouldn't have been, but I never had anything to bargain with. I wasn't very interested in the men anyway.
Was it a better camp than the Limburg one?
Oh, it was much better.
The toilets and health situation better?
Yeah. You had proper places to wash and that type of thing, yeah. But see, it was more established, you know, Stalag 4B.
Did you get the feeling that the Germans knew that the war was going against them by this time?
Among some of them, yeah. Yeah, And there was some of them where they didn't believe Germany could lose the war. Towards the end of the war there, the Germans eased off. They eased off and they wanted to speak to you and that type of thing. And towards the end of the war, they were starting to realise when the armies were actually on German soil that I wasn't going to last very much longer, and I wanted to be nicer to you. But I was never badly treated. When you consider the circumstances, you are in prison. I couldn't really say I was badly treated.
Have you any other memories of this particular camp?
The entertainment was someone at night time, somebody would come in the hut and give you a talk. Remember this. American coming in and he gave us a talk on the circus. I see he spent his life with the circus. You know, he told us how they travelled around the country, how they put up the big top, and they used these elephants, they're called elephants bulls, and they put up the big top. And he gave us quite a good talk. It was very interesting, you know, things like that. And there was so many other wireless, and they would come down every night and give you the news.
Had there been men in this camp for many years?
Some had been in quite a while. Right, camps basically was only like a base because you had to go out to work. Most prisoners was out working. But and CEOs didn't go out to work, you know. And I think the guards in Stalag 4B had a bit of a system where anybody come in, he was made up of a corp. So he didn't have to go out to camp with the work. Gosh, they got transferred, like. But from Stalag 4B, I went to out to work at a village called Ammendorf, not far from Halle, in East Germany after the war. And I worked there.
Did you live there?
Yeah.
What conditions were you living in there?
Well, they weren't too bad. We were building like a big building right next to the main railway line, and an armoured factory. We were turning out half tracks, and there was a main line. Used to watch the stuff go up and down this line. Russian prisoners coming back and German wounded and German supplies going up to the Russian front. Tanks and wagons all on these. And I was working for the waterworks, though, like a waterworks and gasworks. We used to get paid about 30 odd marks a month or something, which was absolutely useless to it. Why we got paid, I never know, because it didn't have to pay. It was no good and we couldn't spend it.
What kind of work were you doing?
This was mostly, I suppose, waterworks was repairing bomb damage. We used to get bombing all day and night. It was the Royal Air Force by day and the Americans by... No, Royal Air Force by night and the Americans by day. And they were nearly there every day, because we weren't very far off this big, like a train estate that used to make all these, was a synthetic rubber factory, I believe. And they were often having to go up on that, and they never hit it yet. Never. They used to hit us instead. And that's what our job was, repairing bomb damaging. Somebody had to go down there. Halle, but I've had some very nasty experiences with Allied bombing.
Do you, any you recall?
Oh, yes. There's one particular day where we're working on men in these pipes. And it was a dull type of day. And cloudy, you know, you couldn't see any blue sky. And we're working away there. And we heard this drone coming. No, and the German sirens went. They give the German sirens there used to give a warning first. Approach, which was a different sound. So you used to give you the approach. And then they would sound the O overhead. And they gave the approach. We were still working. Like, you know, looking at our boss, like, Steve Master Keoff. And then... said, we had bottom end of the field, there was some trenches, and he says, we better go down to the, and we start to walk away. And just as we're walking down, the first stick of bombs coming, like a roar of an express train. Then we took off, we dive into these dugouts we had, and these bombs just go thundering down, and the whole ground was rocking like that. And there, what I saw. And Peter was panicking, you know, and we thought any minute we're going to get caved in here. And then it went on for it doesn't last very long before the planes is, but it seems a long time, but only 20 minutes. And then it stopped, and then the planes And they went away, like, and then we come up the trench. And we, there was a direct hit where we'd been working, and the whole place was absolutely saturated with bombers. And the factory was still puffing out smoke on the other side of the river. There was like a river there. Somebody said it was the Elbe, but I don't know if it was the Elbe, because it might have been, I don't know, whether the Elbe went round that way or not, I don't know. Anyway, the hole that had hit the village where we stopped, Ammendorf, that hit that, because there was a factory there, that I was telling you, and had just missed our billet when we got back, we found that out. And we come out of there, oh, that was a need, that was in need of escape, that. Then we come back, when we finished work, we had to come back to the village, and there was a few hours there. Well, we felt sorry for them, because, you know, it's where we live. You know, people weren't so happy about it either. They were giving us some dirty looks.
Did you get to know the villagers?
No, never. The only people we knew in the village was the cheeky kids. Because when we used to finish work, we used to make a habit of waiting for her. We used to come along this path, get up the main road. We used to make a habit of sitting there, used to sing that song. We're going to hang out the Washington. They're taking a meet, you see. There was that. Yeah.
What time did your day start?
About 6 o'clock in the morning. We should get up about 6 o'clock in the morning, start work about 7 in the morning. The winter mornings then, it was black dark. We used to go through, we used to get out the billet and walk the railway line, pitch black, we were freezing the frost. I had no socks, so I only had rags around my feet. And the spot on this one, they gave us a great coat, which was the way I got it in Stella 4B. Like, it was like a bright blue French army great coat. It had like little buttons on. And it was thin as sixpence. It was absolutely useless. And I had a hat. They gave us a hat to play. It was, I've got upstairs this Belgian hat. And that was only close my heart, you know. Going to work, we didn't even get breakfast, drink a coffee.
Were you still on one meal a day?
Oh, yes. You got your meal when you finished work, when you got back to camp on the next day.
And was it any better than the meals you had been getting?
Not really. It used to vary a lot. Sometimes it was just a boiled potatoes, which was so often rotten, or boiled carrots. And some nights somebody got a bit extra, you know. And it used to vary. But it wasn't very good. You expected to work like that.
Where was it cooked? And
it was cooked down in the village somewhere. I think it was an army place farther along the other road, and somebody, the billet orderly. There was always somebody didn't go to work. He was a billet orderly, and it was his job to go and get the rest of it was there for you when you used to get back.
Was that the rota?
Yeah.
How many of the were there in this?
On this, what I call a commando, a working commando, was 42 of us, and most of them was paratroopers. I was the only DLI bloke in among the 42. There was Yorkshire's, East Yorks, and Kingsville Scottish Borders, but most of them were paras, which were different regiments, paras, you know, like Staffordshire's, and there were Kingsville Scottish Borders, and there was one or two. The chap in charge, our company's man, was a glider pilot, sergeant.
Did any men attempt to escape?
No, there was no one that. There was nobody made any attempt to escape. Although we were working outside on a day time, you could have walked away, but I mean, how far could you get walked away with a British uniform on? Like, it was really stupid.
So basically no escort with you and guards placed around you when you were working?
The guards were there, but it was so easy to walk away. I would go out and say, well, I'm going to spend a penny and I'll just walk away. I could have walked away many times. We used to, I'll tell you what happened to me and a few of us that was on this job. through not being fed. I was swelled up like a sewage pudding. I was actually swelled. I couldn't even get my boots on, or my trousers, or my legs was out here somewhere. There you go. And I could stick my finger in my leg, and I could withdraw it and would leave the imprint of my finger, just like a sewage pudding. And when you used to go to bed on a night time, when you woke up on the morning, it was all in your face. You couldn't open your eyes. Your face was all puffed out. And when you got up, it drained from your face. It went down to your feet. But that was what caused that was a lack of vitamins, no vitamins in the body. And we reported sick, and we went, we saw the, and then there was a French MO. And he gave us some vitamin tablets, what he had. He gave her one a day, where he's supposed to maybe have three or four a day. But he only gave her what he had. But anyway, sort of put on it. It did the trick out and was back to normal and back to work. And there was one day. We were working down in Halla, in the town of Halla. And while we were down there, there was an area. And we were working this, making charcoal, actually. It was all like this firm, that had the water, they had the gas, and they made charcoal and did all sorts of things. And while there was an area on Halla, and on the night time, we finished work, we're waiting for the tram, because the tram used to take us back to Abendorf, which is about 4 miles or something. And no tram came. Oh, wait about an hour. And the German guard is, we'll have to walk. And oh, we're not going to walk. To walk, he says, you ask to you walk, he's mad. So we decided to walk. Well, we had to walk through a tunnel where there was one. We could understand there was no trams coming, but they were all blown up the road. And there was huge, we used to pass these huge flats, you know, when we walked the Halla, and they were flattened. And the people were shaking their fists at us, you know, like this. You know, cause I think it was the first time Halla had ever been bombed. And we walked back to camp. So on the next morning, we had to go back down Halla again. And we walked down the road, and they said, oh, there's no tram, you're going to have to walk. And we decided that we weren't going to walk way down the Halla again. We're not having that again. And the Germans, they were like arguing. And they were saying, right, march, march. And we just stood there, we wouldn't move. And this German, I don't know who he was, he was an NCO, possibly a sergeant major. And he grabbed the rifle off one of the guards and wound up a spout. And he said, march! He said, because if you don't march, he said, what they were explaining was, trying to explain the SS would be here and all the Gestapo would be here. And if you know, you'd be shot. And this, he said, so we're all stunned. We don't even need somebody to break. And basically, somebody said, well, I think we better do it. No sense of getting killed just for the sake of a tram. And then we turned around and we marched. But it was all a misunderstanding. When we got down the road, there was a tram. And they were, oh, we're going to get shot over nothing. You know. And we got the tram, went down to Halla during the night, they fixed it up.
Did you ever fear that the civil population would turn on you after bombings?
No, I never. Yeah, well, yeah, they were maybe, but didn't understand what they were talking about. They might have been threatened or talking about. Never grabbed by anything physical. I'll do actual work on bomb damage as well, something that would go well. I remember finding, digging in this house, and found a loaf of bread which had been flattened. It was only about an inch thick, and I tried eating, but oh, it was full of sand and gritty.
Could you say that the German civil population was suffering at this stage of the war?
They were very frightened of the bombing. Yeah, very, very frightened, because I spent many times down in the area at shelters in Halle when we were working there. Later on, when Halle first got bombed, it got bombed every day after that. And then used to fly overhead and go to Dresden and all these places. And as soon as the signs used to go up, the streets were clear in the crack.